Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 343 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Adam. I'm all by myself today. Jill is out, I believe, getting her wisdom teeth out. So she'll be back shortly with a few less teeth in her mouth. Thinking of you, Jill. I had to do that too. Not a fun experience. But I doubt you're listening to this. And if you are, you're probably a little hopped up on some drugs. So probably won't remember it anyway. But she will be back soon, and we'll be both in the office finally once again. I am back from New York City. I was there for Book Expo America and BookCon, doing a whole bunch of interviews and a whole lot of promotion and lots of fun stuff to share throughout the next couple of months. And the first thing I'll be sharing is today's episode with Sarah Ennie, who is someone that not only is she a wonderful author, her debut book, Tell Me Everything, is a YA that is very, very poignant when it comes to the world of social media. And it's, we talk about this during the interview, but I think it's a book for both YA readers, young adults, and also parents as well. It's very, it's just a great conversation starter. And she's also the host of the First Draft podcast, which I listen to every single week. And if you're not listening to it, I highly recommend. She does what we do here. She interviews authors and has these great conversations with storytellers. And I've been really excited to have this conversation for a long time. We've been online friends for a while now, and more recently in life, in person, kind of friends a few times now as well. And Sarah's one of the people who I sort of, she makes me want to be a better interviewer, and also being a published author. She has done a lot of things that I look up to. So it was a cool moment to get to sit down with a friend and talk about writing and podcasting and the various ways that it's helped her, and just lots of really, really good stuff. So I think you guys will love this. I very much enjoyed getting to hang out with Sarah for a little while at Book Expo before she went off and did a million panels that she was moderating, and I went off and did a bunch more interviews. So it's kind of like two ships in the night. We were laughing because we never took a picture or anything like we were supposed to do. Apparently we're bad at podcasting. So if you want to get a hold of us, you can go to professionalbooknerds.com. You can always find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. And you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. Definitely go subscribe to the First Draft podcast and go check out Tell Me Everything. And if you aren't sold by me just telling you after this conversation, I think you will definitely feel that way. So that's everything I've got on my end. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with the glorious Sarah Ennie on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hey everybody, it's Adam, and I am joined by my good buddy Sarah Ennie today, host of the super popular First Draft podcast, where she interviews other storytellers, which might sound familiar if you listen to this podcast. Also one of the nerdy podcasts that I listen to all the time. She's also the author of Tell Me Everything, which is a wonderful YA book, which has now made me cry twice. And
that's so sweet. I'm just making you cry left and right.
You are making me cry left and right. I was telling you before we started recording, you made me cry with your podcast. Now you made me cry with your book twice, because I did a reread, and I was like, well, I won't be that emotional this time. Nope, super cried. Oh. And it also happens to be, and I know you know this, my niece's like favorite book ever.
I am so in love with your niece. Made an art project about my book.
She did.
Sent me the picture, and it's like, it devastated me. That, speaking of cry.
Well, and then you and I saw each other in, was that Los Angeles?
Yeah, at LA Times Festival.
Yep.
Books.
And yes, you like made a video for her, and you made her, and like you made her entire world.
Yay.
It was, yeah. So,
oh, that's so sweet.
So first off, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah. Oh my God. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be on the podcast.
I know. Yeah. Podcast with a podcast. It's like a whole thing. So, I was tempted to break tradition, which is we usually do like, hey, talk about your book first, and I like to do that first. I really wanted to do what you do and like just do a whole bio thing, but I'm not gonna do that. So first, do you want to tell people about Tell Me Everything, and then we'll just kind of bounce from there?
Totally, yes. So Tell Me Everything came out earlier this year from Scholastic. It is about a girl named Ivy. She is 15 years old, and she's a young artist, but she's really shy, so she's a little bit too shy to share her artwork with anybody. But then she gets really wrapped up in this new social media app that takes off at her school, where people are posting their artwork, and she's so moved by what she's seeing on the app that she, instead of posting herself, she wants to find out, oh, it's an anonymous app, that's important. So people are posting their stuff anonymously, but she really wants to know who's creating this beautiful art. So she goes out of her way to try to find out who's posting this stuff and do nice things for them. But it turns out when people are posting things anonymously, it's because they want to be anonymous.
Right,
so
yeah.
She crosses a lot of boundaries and has to learn a lot about, like, owning her own voice and putting herself out there, because you can't do it for anybody else, it turns out.
Well, okay, so the app is called Veil, and I have to say, like, throughout the book, you talk about a lot of the things that are problematic about it, but also, like, as an app, it's a pretty good idea. Like, I was kind of torn, because you live in LA, right? Like,
yes.
I was shocked you didn't, like, send the app idea to, like, a bunch of VC people. Like, it's a genuinely good idea.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very, it was sort of me sitting down and being like, I knew I wanted to write about social media, but I was like, I don't want to write about an existing app. I don't want to play by anybody else's rules.
Right.
So it was kind of me being like, what's the dream?
Mm-hmm.
What's the dream app? But in my core being, I don't believe that these things are necessarily good. Like, I'm having a real moment with Facebook, as we all
are.
I think. And so I knew I wanted it to, I wanted to explore the problems with it, or the potential problems with it, which means I've probably done more thinking about the negative side of my app than people who have actually created real apps that millions of people use.
Oh, well, you 100% thought more about the negative, because you think about, like, Twitter, and
it's
like
rough.
You said, having a moment with Facebook, like, I have a moment, like, every time I get on Twitter, I'm like, I should be a part of a conversation, and I'm like, oh, all these conversations are terrible and depressing.
Yeah.
But I just think the reason I loved your book so much, I talked about my niece, my sister also read your book and loved it, and it really got me thinking, because my niece is 12,
mm-hmm.
and she's about to go into high school, and she happens to be just the sweetest person, and she's not on social media, but because my sister and her husband are both lawyers, so they're very, like,
mm-hmm.
on that. But it just made me think, like, this is really the first generation of high schoolers that have grown up entirely in this world of social media. So when the reason I think your book is so important for both kids and also for parents is it gives them a connection. Like, like my sister said, she's like, I didn't think about any of this, like,
really?
The negative aspects of things, because my sister's a little bit older than I am. I'm 33 and she's in her late 30s. I won't call out her age on a podcast. Megan's going to yell at me. But she said, she's like, I didn't even have a cell phone in college. So, like, I didn't have to worry about any of this stuff. So just, like, the fact that you make a book, and even, like, Ivy and her parents have kind of almost, like, the same situation.
Totally. That makes me so happy. I'm glad that it was, like, I'm glad that it made your sister think about some things, because I spend way too much of my time thinking about this, and Silicon Valley generally, and what we owe ourselves, and what an anonymity means, and what it means to be public all the time. I don't want to be the older generation talking about the younger generation in any kind of way, but I am glad that I didn't have Facebook until college.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have that kind of stuff until then, and I think I would have developed differently.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Veil talks, or a lot of Tell Me Everything talks about, if you're a young person, and especially a young artist, that means that you want to be able to fail all the time. And there's something about putting something up on Instagram that makes it feel final and makes it feel like it should be the completed thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's putting too much on people too young, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you should be able to fail out loud or quietly in your own room and not feel like you have to show anybody anything.
Yeah, well, not only that, when you're putting something on, like, Instagram, especially when it comes to, you know, photography or art, like
totally.
That, it's either going to be your friends who like it,
right.
You know, double tap that, or it's going to be people that hate on it, and it's not going to be a dialogue or a constructive criticism. You know, Ivy in the book, is she has this art class, and she has what I would determine the world's greatest art teacher, I think. Like,
thank you.
Literally, like, has so much positive and, like, critical thinking about everything that they're doing, but, like, you don't get that on social media. It's people that just want to yell.
Yeah, it's not a place for nuance.
No.
It's a place where it actively encourages strong reactions either way. So it not only means that you're putting yourself out there to be, like, yelled at or called bad words, but you're also being exposed to, like, hyperbolic friend interactions, which are like, you're the greatest, you're the best person that's ever lived. And at some point, doesn't that numb you to actual nuanced feeling? I mean, I think it's changing how we talk to ourselves and each other.
Yeah, well, it's also changing just, like, how our ability to share thoughts or, like, images, things like that. I think about, even when, like I was in high school, and I'm thinking we're about the same age, but like when I was in high school, we would go to prom or homecoming and we would get one of those like I feel like I'm aging us now, like the camera that has like the rolly
Disposable cameras.
Yeah, disposable cameras. Mm-hmm. And like you would take these pictures and you know you had like 24 of them for the night. You're like, all right, let's figure these out, let's make sure that they look good. And then you didn't know until then, you know, a couple days later, and then even then it was like you just shared them by showing them people a picture. Now it's like, I mean, and I'm guilty of this. If you look at my camera roll, it's 1,000 pictures of my dogs.
But, of course. There's never enough pictures of dogs, to be
right,
clear.
But, but
that's what... Ivy is a photographer. That's her medium of choice. Mm-hmm. And she grapples with exactly this. Because she loves... She goes into a dark room. She loves developing her own. And she uses film cameras. Mm-hmm. And this was... I put this in the book because I feel so strongly about it. Like, I love photography. We are the same age. I did the disposable camera thing for years. And it was so... It's part of the experience to then like hand it over to the guy at Wolf Camera or whatever, roll in the next day and then be like, let's see what happened.
Yeah.
Because Ivy says in the book, like part of that experience is capturing the imperfection of life and the imperfection of the moment. And it's a reflection of the fact that you'll never remember things quote unquote accurately. And there's something about social media and instant recording and stuff like that that makes it seem objective when like we're not, we're all subjective creatures.
I feel like I tell people all the time, like one of the reasons I love doing this podcast is because when I get to sit down with someone, especially someone I like adore, I'm like, oh, and yes, that was the compliment towards you. And, but like we get to have like a moment, and to me until I go back and I edit it and I share it with the world, like it's our like little conversation that no one else knows about. And then you put it out in the world afterwards when you've had a chance to think about it. But you're absolutely like, when you create a moment or a memory on, you know, on your phone or and then you share it, it immediately becomes subjective. Like when my wife and I moved into a house that we spent a year building, we took a picture of the two of us and our dogs, and she looked at me, she's like, don't post that right away. And I was like, you're right. She's like, this just have tonight. Like, this is our night. She's like, I don't need 100 people telling us how proud they are of our house.
Right.
It's just sometimes, and it is, it's so in the moment. And I'm curious because of the differences, obviously, that Ivy had between, like, the high school experience we had. Like, how much of her is, like, biographical? Of like, how much of yourself did you put into her?
I mean, a ton. Like, like so much. And in ways, I think that I'm still just even figuring out, you know? Her high school is my high school. It's exactly the floor plan. I mean, I just ripped it off, with the exception of the dome, right? I made up this wild thing.
Extremely good dome, yeah.
Which was just me having fun. But I was a photographer when I was a kid. I was very shy. I felt like I was goth sometimes, and I truly wasn't. Ivy really fancies herself an outsider, but she's not. And also I gave her my love of Jeff Goldblum, which is very personal.
There was no way you could have had that much Jeff Goldblum in there without being
totally off my
head. Had to be,
exactly. So there was a ton of me, but there's also a ton of me in Harold, who is Ivy's best friend, who is this kind of overachieving, to the point of making himself lose his mind, scholarly type, who is really... who encourages Ivy's art, but is himself more of a science-minded person, and also like is seeking objectivity, right? And is seeking equality for people, and he's really passionate about representing everybody at school. And so there's a lot of me in him too. And I think those two being best friends allowed me to ping pong back and forth in my own conversations.
Well, and it's just I love it made me feel about the fact, like, reminded me in high school, like, I love my high school experience. I went to a school, there was 200 people total, and I was the last graduating class before the school closed. Like, it was open for, like, 35 years, and so we had this weird experience when we found out it was closing. But
that's nuts.
I graduated with 48 people, and so because of that, I got to do everything. So kind of the same thing, like, you were talking about, I was in student government, and I was, like, captain of various sports teams, and I was, like, in plays and all stuff. And from the outside looking in, people would probably see me and be like, oh, you were one of the popular kids. You were absolutely, like, having the best time. But if someone were to ask me now, and even then, like, I was so wildly insecure, and I feel like high school, for no matter who you are, is about finding yourself. And that's why I love that you do have Harold and Ivy. They're, like, opposite ends of the kind of, like, social spectrum.
Totally.
But it shows that no matter who you are in high school,
You have the same issues. Yeah. You're the same. You know, at some point, Ivy for all outside appearances is like not having a good time in high school or like engaging. You know, she really keeps herself isolated. But at some point in the book, she realizes that it's self-imposed, mm-hmm. and it's not that no one would want to talk to her if she yeah. just initiated a conversation. She's the one that's holding herself back. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's what Harold finds too. A lot of people in Tell Me Everything are like coming to realizations about themselves and how they've imposed limits on themselves. And it's about like not only Ivy putting her art out in the world, but other people speaking their mm-hmm. experiences and then allowing the people around them to like support them mm-hmm. or see them in a more honest way,
yeah.
which is really scary, right? To be vulnerable, especially as in a high school, to earnestly love something is like death.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not done,
right.
You know? So this, but it's also, that's what makes life worth living. So in this yeah. book, I really wanted to say like, if you can find the bravery to put yourself out there, mm-hmm. odds are you're going to feel better for it and you're yeah. going to find the right people to have in your life.
Well, it's just that there's so many emotions that you're feeling for the first time in high school that you, like, everything feels so big. Like,
yes.
The first time you, like, there's a scene early on where they're in an igloo together and, like, she thinks she has this moment, but she spends, like, she wrestles with it for, like, 2/3 of the book. She's like, I thought we had a moment. Like, I, like, felt myself being, like, every single time I would talk to someone on like AOL Instant Messenger or mm-hmm. something,
oh
and
my God,
like,
yes.
I'd be like, oh my God, they probably are in love with me. I'm in love with them. And they would be like, someone I like barely knew. And then like you'd leave an away message that was like a sentence from Good Will Hunting. And they're like, they're totally going to know what this means. It's like, you're feeling
yes.
all these things for the first
yes.
time. And you also probably don't realize other people are doing the same thing.
I would argue why I love writing YA is like we don't stop having those moments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we never stop having all of these feelings or all of these experiences. It's just that in high school you can't contextualize them.
Mm-hmm.
Like now if you and I were on AOL chat, we'd yeah. be like, oh no, we've had enough AOL chat conversations to get a sense of like who's engaged, like how engaged this other person is or whatever. You
yeah.
know, you have like the breadth of your life
mm-hmm.
to measure to and against, but not in high school. In
mm-hmm.
high school, it's like, this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
No one has ever felt this before,
yeah.
and you can't be convinced otherwise, because why would you? That's you're right, as a human, having that feeling for
yeah.
the first time. And you're right, like, there's this, the book opens with Harold and Ivy having this, like, kind of romantic moment,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes away to Smarty Pants camp for the summer, and she's like, what am I supposed to do? I'm out here, like, in the wind, you know,
mm-hmm.
having a feeling I've never felt before, and the only person I trust to talk about it yeah. is the person I had that moment with, and he's gone.
Yeah.
And it totally torments her.
I'm just thinking about all of the different away messages I used to leave,
oh
like the Taking Back Sunday lyrics.
Oh my God, I had a bunch of those
so
too.
So angsty.
Yes.
Well, and then I'm the youngest of three, so I would have a sibling that would come in and like take me offline. Like, wait, who sent me a message? Like, who was messaging
no.
me? The worst.
I can't even believe that. As an older sibling, I am horrified.
I probably just imagine the amount of girlfriends I probably lost because they probably sent messages.
I know
what?
Your life would be different.
So my life would be so different. But yeah, I don't know. And then when I remember moving on to college, like there's a part in your book that they, when something happens on Veil,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you want to, I don't really want to give away more.
Just, well, like we talked about how there's a downside to Veil.
Yeah.
Somebody posts something really terrible
mm-hmm.
and then everybody who loves this app, like Ivy, has to kind of
yeah.
grapple with that.
And so when that happens, there's this whole like response to it where there's communication going on amongst the parents, and there's communication
yeah.
going on in the school community. And the reason I was thinking about that is, you mentioned like Facebook when we were in college. When I was a freshman in college, Facebook came to, 'cause remember
yes.
back when it first started?
Yes.
For those of you who are under our age, Facebook used to go like campus to campus.
Yeah.
You had to have a .com or a .edu
mm-hmm.
Email address. And I remember when it came to our campus, people got obsessed with it, as
yes.
everyone did. And I wrote for our college newspaper, and like I did like the op-ed on the back, like the real, like, as I was laughing when I literally felt like I was having
That's
an experience
amazing.
Of your book. And we did a whole thing about like, is Facebook good, is it bad,
wow.
is there privacy issues going on? Like I was having
Man,
deja vu.
You were
because,
on the forefront of that.
Yeah, well, a lot of good we did, because now
I
Facebook
mean,
has all of our information.
Yeah,
but it I feel like that was like I said, I think that's why I think older readers will appreciate this because it is like going through all over again. I feel like Twitter didn't really have that because it had already happened with Facebook. And
Twitter doesn't want to engage with our lives the way Facebook does.
Yeah.
Facebook wants to own your life. Mm-hmm. Facebook wants to be the... Remember when we were starting the internet, it was the AOL homepage?
Uh-huh.
It was like how you got your news or whatever. It would pop up whether you wanted to or not. Facebook has replaced that.
Yeah.
Not for everyone. I'm actively fighting against that, and I do not go on Facebook, but that's why it had such a disproportionate impact on people having information around the election and every other time.
Yeah.
So Twitter is... And Instagram, they're a little bit a step back.
Yeah.
They're not as, like, intricately involved in your life.
Well, do you know... Instagram is owned by Facebook, though.
I know.
Okay, I was making
but,
sure
like,
you knew that.
They're... no, I'm very aware.
I know.
Because Instagram is the only one that I feel really, like, it would be really hard to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's less... Yeah. Intense.
Also, she's like, you mentioned having a love for photography.
It's Vail, like, yeah. I mean, like, it's the closest thing to Vail.
Yeah, and they have the stories where you can put something on,
yes.
disappears for after 24 hours.
Yes.
And I have issues where I will I will put something on my story and I'll have like a typo and I didn't notice it like 12 hours later. I'm like, do I delete this? Do I leave it on?
No, let it live.
I literally did it on the podcast Instagram like the other day.
That's
I like
so
just,
funny.
I looked at it. I was like, son of a, come on. all right, so I mentioned you also have a podcast much like ours, First Draft, which I adore. And before we started recording, I feel like there's this intersection of podcast listeners who like listen to you and listen to us and listen to Yin Chang on 88 Cups of Tea,
yes.
and like Reading Glasses,
yes.
and like Melissa Albert's Barnes & Noble one.
Oh my god, she's so good.
And but I'm curious, like, what made you want to start having these conversations with people?
That's a really good question. So I started the podcast in 2014,
mm-hmm.
and at that point I was getting a divorce, and my book had gotten to acquisitions,
mm-hmm.
but not sold. So for anyone that doesn't know, acquisitions means, like, the very last thing that needs to happen before a publisher says, we would like to buy your book.
Yeah.
So it made it to the very edge of getting bought and then didn't. So I was in a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, like... I really wanted to feel inspired again. It was,
mm-hmm.
I'd been writing at that point for 5 years, and hadn't seen the fruits of my labor pay off. And I also was moving. I was going through massive life changes, and I loved podcasts and listening to podcasts, especially long form interview ones, like What the Fuck with Marc Maron and What WTF
You're
with
good.
Marc Maron
You're
and
fine.
And Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Were so soothing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, at that time when I was the loneliest I've ever been, they were, like, a companion.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to have... And longer conversations are better.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I want to talk to authors and people who are doing what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and who are creative people who I admire,
yeah.
in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to qualify myself to be an NPR reporter, which hasn't happened. But I really loved having those conversations. I was trained as a reporter, so
mm-hmm.
I know interview skills.
Yeah.
That was like my favorite part of being a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a convalescence of
yeah.
all, of, or a
sure.
congealing, whatever,
congealing,
of all
yeah.
of these things. And then it just was so fun
yeah.
that I wanted to keep doing it.
Well, and you, I will pay you a compliment. It's something that I struggle with, where I will try to ask a question, then I find myself giving a soliloquy where an author would just looking like...
It's hard.
Is there something coming that I'm supposed to say? But I think what you do such a good job of, and that I know I need to do better with, is you have an ability to, like, say a few words to get an author to open up.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think you're doing a great job.
So well, man,
don't beat yourself up too
Thank
much
you.
About it. That's something I think about a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I am constantly trying to say less
yeah.
in asking questions and to... I just wrote a whole thing that maybe the world will see at some point about how to ask questions, because I think about
yeah.
this all the time. First of all, my podcast is edited, so some of the dumb stuff I say you don't hear. So just to be fair, super, super fair. But I think all the time about... I think that some interviewers mistake specificity
mm.
for good questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you ask someone the most specific question, you're going to get a yes or no.
Yeah.
So I don't shy away from asking, like, how do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, or questions that are, like, I literally sometimes ask questions where I'm, like, what am I even saying? It's
yeah.
so abstract. But it doesn't matter it doesn't matter what I'm saying. What matters is how the other person mm-hmm. is connecting to what I'm saying. Because we all have these thoughts. We're all living in the world. And especially when you're getting now niche into, we all love books and we love expression in this manner. So if I say, like, how do you think that books, like, engage kids nowadays? Like, that's such a broad, weird mm-hmm. question, and it would be hard to answer, you'd think.
Yeah.
But the truth is, we are thinking about it all the time. Mm-hmm. So that person's going to be like, here's my bullet list yeah. and my TED Talk about all the thoughts I have on this.
There's such a fine line between asking a broad, abstract question like that that gets people talking, whereas, like, I know a lot of times I will, and these are ones that I usually edit out, is I will try so hard, and I'll do so much research with people to see the questions that they've been asked before.
Yes.
And I'll be like, I'm going to ask them a question they've never been asked before.
Yeah.
And I get so specific with a question where they look at me like, no one's ever asked me that before. But they don't say it in a way like, oh, great question. They're like, no one's ever asked me that before because it's a really stupid question.
I doubt that's true. But I do exactly what you are saying. Mm. I, like, will read a ton of interviews and see what people have been asked over and over again. But often their answers, there's something in there answer to that Pat question that's what I hone in on. Mm-hmm. So I mean, an example isn't going to come to mind that wouldn't be that helpful anyway, but when someone answers, like, you get inspiration from where, and they talk about the walk they go on every day with your dog,
yeah,
it's like, where's that walk?
Yeah.
Like, what time do you walk? Like, from that point is then when you kind of can branch mm-hmm. out into all these other, that's what I have found to be useful.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of being like, not letting them off the hook for this initial uh-huh. question. It's like, dig deeper.
Yeah.
And that's what people won't necessarily do on their own.
Yeah.
But when they're prompted, they'll kind of go with you on that.
And that sort of reminds me of, along the same lines of, I hate asking authors, like, where do you get your inspiration? And, like, we're like, where do you get your ideas from? And you just, like, see their head, like, a wall to the side. But Harlan Coben, we had him on recently, and he brought up on his own, like, he was just like, people always ask me where I get my ideas from. And we looked at it, we were in front of, like, 500 people at a library, and I was like, we weren't going to ask you that. And he's like, I'll answer it anyway, because he's just a great outgoing guy. But he said, kind of how you were talking about how you find questions, is like, okay, you're going for a walk with your dog, where is it, how does that inspire you? He said he'll look at something and he'll just ask a what-if question of himself. So the reason he wrote his most recent book, which is called Runaway, he was sitting in Strawberry Fields in New York mm-hmm. and he saw this person playing a guitar, and he's like, what if that person was my daughter, and what if they had ran away? What would have happened from there?
Interesting.
And then he just starts writing, and then he's like, and then I feel like that's a lot, same thing with, like, questions, where it's like,
yeah.
What if I were to drop you into, I love asking, like, fantasy writers, like, what if I were to drop you in someone else's world? What story would you tell? Like, you see their eyes percolate.
Yeah.
Because they get all excited.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a really good question.
Oh, yeah, you can steal it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, anytime, like, I asked Leigh Bardugo, I was like, where would, what, like, other universe would you
yeah,
write in?
Yeah.
And I think she said Narnia. And I was like, okay, what story would you tell? And she's like, and then I had to, like, cut, like, a half hour of an interview because yeah. she's like, I actually want to write that, so can you, like.
That's so funny. Yeah. Oh my God, I love that.
But, so what are, obviously since that time you have become published, like, do you think anything from the podcast experience helped that along the line, or was it just that it was kind of the time for your book to get picked up?
The podcast for sure helped. I mean, the podcast has, it's impossible for me to overstate how much the podcast has changed my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just talking to Gabby Rivera yesterday, who is a wonderful author of Juliet Takes a Breath, and she's about ready to start a podcast. And when she said that, I, like, leaped across the table and was like, your life is going to change.
Yeah.
Like, do you know that your life is about to change? And not only because it kept me in publishing in mm-hmm. in an outward-facing way, whereas that doesn't happen if you don't have a book out.
Mm-hmm.
So I managed to, like, finagle my way into public spaces with the podcast in a way that was very organic to me and felt good to me. But it's all connections. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, this conversation is not real because
right.
we're recording it. It's real. Like,
yeah.
now we know each other.
Yeah.
And we're buds.
Say,
you know?
I feel like we would have this conversation if my phone wasn't
exactly.
in front of us.
We
yeah.
totally would. And that's what's so lovely about it. Mm-hmm. And so those connections carry through. So
yeah.
my editor, Amanda Maciel at Scholastic, is, like, a brilliant genius who has also written books that everyone should read. And B, was buddies with a friend of mine who I'd known for a long time. But I had Michelle Schusterman, my friend, on the podcast. And Michelle was, like, at a writing retreat with Amanda. And Amanda was, like, talking about stories she wanted to tell at Scholastic. And
mm-hmm.
Michelle was like, you know, I really need to connect you
yeah.
and Sarah. And then tell me everything. We kind of worked on it together and developed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is just one way that it like directly contributed. But sure. I know also that when Amanda was pitching me to Scholastic, mm-hmm. David Levithan knew who I was, mm-hmm. which is mind blowing, yeah. like totally insane. David Levithan is a legend.
He's amazing.
And I haven't had him on the podcast yet, which is a crime.
You should.
I need to get on that.
He came to Cleveland and I was like the most excited person in the world. Yeah,
he's so great. But so I know it made it an easier sell also. I mean, I created a platform for myself. And it's funny because when people ask me for like advice or career advice, I'm like, you know, my career is insane. I was like, I can't in good faith be like, you should start a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. But that has worked for me. That's led me to where we are.
You're absolutely, when people ask the same thing, they're like, and we admittedly at Overdrive, like when people ask me like, well, how did you start a podcast? And like, I won't lie, like, yes, I am not unaware of the fact that I'm able to speak with people. And I know that that is a unique part of it. But for us, we work at a company who works with 5,000 publishers. And I could walk up to someone and be like, hey, email Penguin Random House and ask for so-and-so.
Right.
And that's just, for us, like, before we had any amount of listeners, we were getting names of authors that made no sense.
Yeah.
And so people, I always feel bad when people ask me that. They're like, well, how did you get started? I'm like, I asked my director for some microphones and then I started emailing people and they just didn't say no.
But it's so smart. Yeah. And also what you guys are doing is a great service to writers, because any place that you can talk about books, and I think publishing podcasts are still kind of new ground.
Yes.
So I think it was really prescient of you.
Well, and I think it is just, I think what people don't realize about authors is, and what I finally got over the hump and was able to ask them is like, especially if it's one over the phone where I'm like, hey, I need 45 minutes of so-and-so's time.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, they have 45 minutes. They work from home. Like, they'll be happy to do it. And so I was like, we're getting these authors where if you told 17-year-old Adam they were going to talk to them, I'd be like, I'm going to cry. But I feel like even if people don't have anything to do with having a podcast, I feel like if you have a question for an author, as long as it's not like, hey, do my book report,
I'm sure
you get some of those.
Well, I haven't yet, but I know that happens a lot.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if you email an author a question, you're usually going to get a response. And probably an eloquent one, because they're an author.
Well, exactly. And, like, there's no harm in it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like go through the channels that the author has provided for you. Like, fill out a form on their website or send an email that they give out. Like, certainly don't, like, Google their home address and go see them.
That's not great.
But, authors are... And here's the other thing about doing a podcast is what I've learned and what I tell people all the time. People want to talk about themselves.
Yes.
And not, I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm not saying people are narcissists. People want to talk about themselves, especially when they are putting their blood, sweat, and tears into artwork like this. They have something to say. Mm-hmm. And so if you give them the opportunity to talk about it and you engage with them in a really, like, good faith way, mm-hmm. then they're going to have the best time.
Well, and I think this is from, like, Almost Famous or something, but there's a line from a movie that basically it's like, anytime you're listening to someone speak, more often than not, you're just waiting for your turn to talk. But podcasts are a different experience because you are actively down, like, people who download this and see your name and push play, they're actively doing that because they want to hear you tell your story.
And they can't talk back, right?
Right. Like, they have to listen.
That's what I found. That's why podcasts were so pivotal to me at that time when mm-hmm. When I was post-divorce and just, like, didn't want to be around people. Yeah. I was very in my feelings mm-hmm. and needed to be quiet. But I wanted human connection mm-hmm. and hearing two people talk, especially two people that I really admired, mm-hmm. especially comedians, right? Like, at that time, I was like, let me just listen to two comedians, like, goof off
and
be out of my head for a couple mm-hmm. hours. Like, that was a life-saving moment for me, and podcasts really stepped in.
You said the two words that I explain to people all the time is human connection. Like, to me, and I get really, like, emotional and sappy about this all the time when I tell people, they're like, well, what do you like about the podcast? I'm like, I am having a conversation, like we kind of talked about before, like, I'm having a conversation with you that no one else is ever going to have. I'm like, yes, other people are going to hear it,
right?
But I probably wouldn't have had this opportunity if we both didn't have podcasts, and there wouldn't have been a reason for us to ever, like, meet. And, like, that means so much to me, like, when I was talking to, and it could be, people always ask, like, who are the biggest names of people you talk to? And I hate that question because I actually like talking to debut authors more because they're more excited and it's a conversation that's new for them as well.
Right.
Like, if I talk to someone who's on New York Times bestsellers list, like, once a month, I'm just another person asking the questions for 15 minutes.
It's true. And then that question isn't fair either, because it's like, the better question is, like, who's been my favorite person to, like, have a conversation with? Because mm-hmm. that's, like, a super subjective thing, too, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, who's the person that I sat down with and then was like, I think I have a new best friend? Uh-huh. Like, we just hit it off, you know? That's not equated to success.
Right.
at all. That's been very interesting too. And also, like, then when you hit record on your phone and you ask people questions, sometimes you get people who have been media trained. Sometimes it's the media trained outside of, like, into the robots. Mm-hmm. And other times when some people have been talking to me, I've been like, you need media training. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't used to talking to themselves.
Yeah, we've had both ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
For sure.
There was someone that just tweeted the other day, and I think I retweeted this, that they were a reporter saying, anecdotally, I can tell you people who are in therapy are better interviews. Yeah. And I was like, 100%. Uh-huh. Just getting accustomed to eloquating how you feel and what your thought process is makes you a better interviewer. Yeah. I think it makes you a better human. I'm here to say everyone should be in therapy.
Well, not only that, therapists should have podcasts like ours because they ask those questions that get you to talk and talk and talk, and that's what their job is.
Wouldn't you listen to a podcast that was just like an hour of like every 5 minutes a therapist like prompting you with a question and it's just supposed to be you talking?
How does that make you feel? It's just every five minutes it says, how does that make you feel?
That would be so freaking funny.
I'm going to ask you an impossible question because you mentioned it. I won't say who are your favorites. That's awful. It's an awful question. But, like, who was a conversation you had that you were not expecting to turn out, like, and, like, left you after that day? You're like, wow. That was...
Yeah, that is a great question. The first one, I mean, the one that comes to mind right away is Libba Bray. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough that she is buddies with my agent, Sarah Burns. And so really early on in the recording of the podcast, like the first month I was doing it, I got to sit down with Libba Bray, which is mind-blowing in the first place. But then I went to her home. She opened up her house to me. We sat down at her kitchen table and talked for 3 hours. And she is the most spectacular human being on earth and spent half the time asking me questions.
Yeah.
It was just really moving to be with someone who's so successful and so has every right to be like, to be a little cautious, right? But no, she was like, opened her heart completely to me, met me exactly where I was at, was so gracious. So she, like, that was like, I'm like getting emotional thinking about it. It was really important to me.
Yeah.
So that conversation and those two episodes I recommend to people who are starting the podcast, because they're just like, I was like, if you like that, then you'll like what this is all about. Because it's a lot of talking about books, but it's a lot of talking about feelings, which is why it continues to be of interest to me.
Yeah, that's what I said. You made me cry because of the feelings. I was like walking my dogs, like sobbing the other day listening to you, and I was like, Sarah.
I mean, I'm not going to say I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. That's what podcasts should do. Okay, so towards the end of ours, we do 9 questions. We call them Nerd 9. They're not rapid fire because... We used to call them rapid fire, and people, like, we got, like, almost like hate mail. They'd be like, Adam, please stop saying rapid fire, because you get on tangents all the time. So
that's,
I don't call them anymore.
Amazing.
They're just lighthearted questions.
Like, just be honest.
And they've probably heard me say this little description, like, 1,000. We get emails, and people like, please stop saying it in a description. I'm like, not
every author
listening.
You have to explain it to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so first one is, what's the last book you finished reading?
Ooh, the last book I finished reading, I just read on the flight over here, Jason Reynolds' new book, Look Both Ways. I was lucky enough to get an early copy PDF, and I was reading it on the plane just like a mess, just a slobberiness.
He rules so hard.
It's like, I now have to go watch his movie, so I made a movie about him. I'm getting the chance to interview him, and he's out of my mind.
I got to talk to him as well, and not only was the interview amazing, but he ended it with, I appreciate you, and I was like, that's the best goodbye I've ever heard, and like exploded.
Bursting into tears.
What's your favorite place to read?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, lately, I get most of my reading done in bed.
Yeah.
I have this weird sleep schedule. I don't know if this happens to you, especially when I'm super into a book.
Uh-huh.
I'll wake up at 2 in the morning, right? Like, I'm this person that falls asleep okay, but then I wake up at 2 in the morning and my mind is racing. But if I'm in the middle of a good book, then I'm like, oh, okay, I guess it's time to read.
Yeah.
And so I read for like 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day, I'm like, why did I do that to myself? And I do it again the next day.
Yeah.
So planes and my bed.
Okay. All right. Do you remember the first book that kind of made you fall in love with reading?
You know, this is such a good question. And I love when I talk to people when they can really pinpoint specific books that they loved so much when they were kids or read and reread and reread and reread. And I don't remember things that clearly or that well, but the book that changed me as a reader and made me like step up my game as a reader was The Giver.
That's a really good answer.
I remember reading that book and being like, oh, this isn't just a story. Yeah. Like, this is something different. You know, a part of my brain, like, clicked in on the gear and started moving because of that book.
Okay. What's one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Ooh, that I've not yet been to?
Yeah.
Finland. That is where my people are from. That is what any is a Finnish
name. I can
see
you got some Scandinavian in here.
Oh, yes. Not a small amount of Scandinavian in this Swiss-ness right here, yes.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee, for sure.
Cats or dogs?
Okay, don't hate me, everybody. Cats, for sure.
So the only reason I ask is Jill, who's not here. She is a cat person. I am a dog person. And so it's our eternal battle.
Well, here's the true answer is my cat, Hammer, is a tuxedo cat. And he is, I love him dearly, but he is dumb as a rock. And so he is the closest that he's right in the middle of the cat-dog spectrum.
Uh-huh.
So he, to me, is perfect.
You do a good job with Hammer on your Instagram. I'll
thank
just say
you.
That. I lost my train of thought. What's your favorite holiday to celebrate?
Halloween.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in my life feel a lot of pressure around Halloween, so they don't want to celebrate it. I say to them, get over it and have fun. It's the best holiday.
You need to come to the Overdrive offices for Halloween. We have 350 people and everyone, all out. Bonk. We have a costume contest that I get to be the one who announces it. And I just, like, I don't know why. It turns into, like, a Don Rickles. Like, I basically, like, roast everyone. I don't know why they keep letting me do it. I'm so mean to everyone.
That is amazing.
The costumes are wild.
No, on Halloween, in Los Angeles, in West Hollywood, they shut down this massive boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same place that they do Pride. The only other time that it's shut down in this way is Halloween. And the costumes. Mm-hmm. I just get wine in a paper bag, like a wino, with my friends. We dress up like crazy, and then we just walk up and down the street and seeing all of the cool-ass costumes that people think of. It's the best.
What is your favorite food?
Wow, good question.
You're LA. I thought you were going to say tacos right away. So many LA people say tacos, which is okay.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I know.
Tacos for sure. But you know what's so, what comes to mind is like beef stroganoff.
Sure. That works.
That is my comfort food. Like,
300 and however many episodes, that is the first beef stroganoff I've got. And the last one, and this is the one that everyone always yells at me that I don't tell them ahead of time, is if you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would you pick?
Wow.
Mine's Jim Henson, if that helps.
That's such a good
right?
one.
Right? I'm adorable. I know.
You are adorable. You'd be like, I'm making you a Muppet.
That's right. I have a Muppet. My friend, I'll stall for you for a minute. One of my coworkers who comes on the podcast quite often, her and her husband made me a Muppet in my likeness. It's on my desk.
Is that on your Instagram? You need to be like,
yeah,
promoting
I'll find
that.
It for
okay,
you. Yeah, I'll find it for you. It should be more on the podcast Instagram, but
I will
put it on there.
I want the Muppet to ask questions.
His name's Melvin. Just
Melvin the Muppet. Okay, I'm no closer to an answer, but let's see. I mean, the person that came to mind first, so I'll go with that, is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
She's pretty great.
Also, to bring it full circle, my niece, who adores you, went as Ruth Bader Ginsburg for Halloween last year.
Your niece is my new best friend.
I know, this thing, like, I want to be best friends with you, but I also feel like I should just be the respectful person and let you two be best friends.
Listen, that, like, warms my heart.
Yeah.
A little girl dressing like Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I will find a picture and I'll send it to you.
Yes, I would love that.
All right, last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from Tell Me Everything?
I really, first of all, I love Jeff Goldblum. I love and appreciation for Jeff Goldblum. The what you just said about your sister is like one of the things I want people to walk away. Like, the book is about social media and art. So on the social media side, I want people to think critically about not like hating social media, but like, how do I engage with this? How am I forming identity through these things? What would happen to me if they disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
I just want people to think about engaging with stuff like that, because a lot of it is unconscious, thoughtless engagement. And when it comes to art, I was like, this book is so like me telling myself to like buck up and be brave enough to put art in the world, which is kind of a twisted logic thing because this is the whatever. But so that if it made any one person like start a new art project or feel like they can show it to somebody, that would be like the ideal.
That's awesome. So you are my favorite person. Thank you for joining us today.
You're my favorite person. This is such a good interview. Thank you.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Rakuten Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.